to begin her exploration of the linked destination, but the spirit asked to take the scenic route. In her opinion, it was still valuable to explore this territory manually, as opposed to simply appearing at their destination. Of course, Lyphra understood that what she really wanted was to see more of the place that James had originally come from. Still, she indulged in the spirit's wishes, the two rapidly traveling through the floor. Thanks to Lyphra keeping an eye out for any probing world sight, they were able to avoid the gaze of any other entities from this floor, reaching the cave after approximately an hour. Once there, Lyphra swept her senses over the cave, finding it old and abandoned. There did not appear to be any signs that anyone had been there for a long time.
"So, where's the good stuff?" Lyphra asked with a playful tone,
the world spirit landing on the ground and walking deeper into the cave.
"It's back here," she responded,
creating a small ball of light that illuminated the dark cave. Once the light began to shine out, Lyphra was able to recognize a small black clump at the furthest wall back. She couldn't tell if the black rock had naturally grown there, or if someone planted it there later, but it was clearly the same type of material as what she had found before.
"What do we do now?" the spirit asked in excitement,
while Lyphra walked up to inspect the mineral.
"We've got a protocol to follow. I'm going to send a clone of myself through this stone and have it run around for a few minutes. If it survives that long and does not experience any mimetic interference, it will report back. If it comes back early, we have to immediately destroy it before it can transmit any possibly hazardous information."
As she said that, Lyphra began to separate a piece of her slime, allowing it to grow into an identical copy of herself. Watching this, the spirit tilted her head.
"Wouldn't it be faster if I just went to the other side to investigate?" she asked, anxiously.
Lyphra reaching over and chopping the top of her head with a hand.
"Hey! What was that for?" she asked, indignantly,
crouching down and holding her head.
"We can't risk you getting infected," Lyphra said in a firm tone. "Any time there is a mimetic threat, all world spirits have to immediately evacuate the area. Not only that, but you are forbidden from exposing any part of your senses to the infected area. If one of you were to be infected by a hazardous meme, there is no telling what kind of damage that would cause to the natural energy of the entire world. Maybe just infecting you would be worse than if the entire world was infected by that same meme."
Hearing that, the spirit's eyes went wide, and she slowly nodded her head, understanding the seriousness of the matter. Although they were tracing James's steps, there were no guarantees that this was the exact rock that he had used to get to the natural energy core.
"Now, this clone of myself has entirely severed its mental connection with me. Until it gets back and we have inspected it for any potentially hazardous contamination, that connection will remain severed."
As she said that, Lyphra had her clone walk over and pass through the black stone, crossing her arms and waiting.
5 minutes, starting now.
Despite both of them knowing that the process would last a full 5 minutes, neither of them were incredibly patient individuals. Given their actual ages, this in itself was a wonder. By the end of the 5 minutes, not only the spirit, but even Lyphra was bouncing in anticipation. Right on time, after exactly 300 seconds had passed, the stone seemed to shimmer, and another Lyphra walked out from the wall of the cave.
"Well, did you find anything?" the spirit asked,
but Lyphra's true body cut her off by erecting a barrier around the clone.
"Like I said, inspection first,"
Lyphra spoke firmly. She held one hand forward, pushing it into the air and creating a golden ripple. When she pulled her hand back, a set of scales were within her palm.
"My method of inspection is an artifact that I crafted with a little help from Terra. The Trial of Fate's Scales. It takes a fair amount of divinity to use it, but when I do, I can measure the weight of various actions. For instance, I can see if it is safe to let the clone out of the barrier by placing the two actions of releasing the clone and destroying the clone. Whichever action has the more negative consequences will be heavier.
As Lifra said that, she created two tokens in the air, placing one on each arm of the scales. Once she infused her divinity into the scales, there was a sharp drop on one side, causing the spirit to look on in worry. Was that freedom or destruction? Lifra looked at the token that had dropped the scales, smiling slightly.
Destruction, which means that freedom is the positive answer.
After she made that confirmation, Lifra removed the barrier that surrounded her clone, re-establishing the mental link.
So, did you find anything? The spirit asked once again, glancing to Lifra as if waiting to be stopped again.
A bit, the clone nodded her head. The floor on the other side definitely has a lighter gravity than this one, but not by much. If I were to guess, it would be in the late 50s. Still, it wasn't the same planet that we're on now, because I wasn't able to access the system.
Was it dangerous there? The spirit asked in a hesitant tone, though the clone shook her head.
It was night time, and my main body didn't give me a core for world sight, so I wasn't able to properly assess the local life forms. However, I could definitely hear movement in the distance.
The original Lifra nodded her head, reviewing the 5 minutes of memories.
It sounds like a giant, big crushing footsteps. It should be safe for the two of us to go over, though. Even if the system isn't in place there, I don't lose my power.
The spirit smiled brightly, and the two of them began to pass through the stone. However, on the other side, Lifra only saw the spirit appear for a brief moment, before she suddenly vanished. Lifra's eyes went wide, looking around and scanning the area with her energy.
Little friend? Little friend, where are you?
With her world sight, she could sense that there was only a faint trace of the spirit's presence left behind, as if it had teleported elsewhere. Clearing her throat, Lifra mobilized the natural energy in the air to call out,
"Little friend! Little friend! Come back and play!"
Green light rushed forth in a wave, converging in front of Lifra and immediately dispersing. Blinking in surprise, she rushed back to the 64th floor of Fior again, where she found the spirit waiting, a despondent look on her face.
What happened?
I was expelled, she answered, in a sulking tone. As soon as I got to the other side, I felt something pulling me, and was ejected to the natural energy core of Fior. I rushed back over as soon as I could, and felt you calling me from the other side, but couldn't go to you.
Has this ever happened to you before?
She asked, in confusion, and the spirit answered,
Not for a long time, but yes. When I was first created in Fior by the Keeper, I was expelled in the same manner. I thought that having me accepted by the system here would have solved my problems, but it would seem that I must be accepted by every planet we visit in Fior.
Lifra pursed her lips before an idea occurred to her.
So, listen to this. What if, every time I hit a new area, I try to call you? Then we can test your range of activity and also get a confirmation on anywhere that I end up.
I also want to try to bring back the orbs from the other side, just to see if they would work on our crystal spire. The world spirit paused, looking at Lifra hesitantly.
If they do, won't you be robbing that world of one of its precious level spheres?
Lifra shrugged her shoulders carelessly.
And, by the time we're able to properly explore that area, we'll have way more options to bypass the level system.
Okay, but how are you going to find it? Do you have something from the Keeper to help with that? She asked,
and that made Lifra pause. The go-to answer would usually be to have Auravi find something and then teleport it to them. However, that wasn't possible here. As the floor was considered outside of Dale's territory, Auravi wouldn't even be able to observe her there. Lifra paused, starting to walk back and forth while thinking. After a few minutes of silence, the spirit simply turning her head from side to side to watch her, Lifra tilted a hand.
I've got it! Even if Auravi can't go there, we've got someone else that can.
We do? The spirit asked in confusion.
Yep. She should be free by now, too.
Lifra grinned broadly, closing her eyes. Petra! Petra! Hey, Petra!
Answer the call already!
What? Petra's annoyed voice responded after Lifra's persistent messaging. I was trying to have dinner. What's going on?
Hi!
Lifra responded, causing Petra to pause. Did you do all of that just to say hi?
Of course not!
Wanna help me explore another planet of Fior? Add two more layers to your shadow world, possibly increase the level limit of Fior as a whole, and see amazing new sights? There was another long pause.
Lifra? Okay, fine. Where am I going?
District 98573, Pod 7. From there, go to the Black Gate, and you'll get the 64th floor. You should be able to find me once you have that.
Can I finish eating first? Petra asked with a faint grumble.
What's more important, food or adventure?
Is that a serious question?
Lifra tilted her head before responding.
It might be. Hurry up and finish. Oh, and the locals here are all basically James on a warpath. Move through your shadow world where you can. Now, you tell me?
Chapter 101. I sat in my office, reading through the reports that had been delivered by Lifra. It had now been 3 weeks since her discovery of the Black Stone, so she had taken both Petra and the local world spirit on an adventure. Throughout the process, they documented 6 different sets of Black Stones, the spirit noting that these appeared to be all of the stones on the floor. Of the 6 stones, none of them led to the same destinations, nor did any of them lead to either a uppermost or innermost floor, meaning that this would not allow for the convenient exploration of other planets in Fior. Additionally, none of these stones went to the same planet as the one that they had been exploring, as all of the stones only connected to lower-level floors. However, upon exploring these other floors, they found one that possessed mana stones. According to Lifra's speculation, as this was the only floor where they found such a material, it was likely to be the next step of James's original path, but this couldn't be confirmed. After all, without the world spirit able to join them on the other side of each set of stones, they were unable to confirm whether or not there were any other similar materials in any of the 6 locations. Regardless of this, Lifra was happy to conclude her investigation there. I was worried that she might try to trace his path through the mana core, but she didn't go that far. Even Lifra was wary of the dangers posed by the creatures that resided within this area. While Lifra was having her adventure, there was little else to note. The second wave of test engines failed, though this time they had the foresight to send unmanned ships. Because of this, there was still no reliable method of exploring outside of the Hyperlane network yet. Additionally, Asnod had worked to popularize a new cooking method, modified from how the Hajit prepare their street food. These new flavored energy packs were circulating primarily around Deccan, but were starting to make themselves evident in other worlds, too. I even tried it for myself, and found that it was exceptional. Tsubaki had begun practicing to make it herself. On an unrelated note, I had received the list of proposed trades from Bellarose, and had taken the time to review it. For the most part, I didn't see anything that I thought was important. They had a few interesting inventions, but nothing really that seemed worth paying a large amount of points for. If anything, just the idea of the inventions would be enough for some research teams to create them. Perhaps the most special item on the list was a mimetic monitor. According to the trade list, this was a refined system that could be uploaded into a large-scale network and would constantly be on the lookout for any infected information. Once such information was found, it would be promptly censored, with an alert sent to relevant authorities. This reminded me of the divine abilities that Lavender had developed, but on a much larger scale. After seeing this on the list and realizing what it meant,
I sent him a message to ask more about it. Thankfully, he seemed rather inclined to share. According to Bella Rose, the memetic monitor was created due to a large-scale void outbreak on his world, which led to numerous void beasts attacking various planets. At the time, his fallen gods were unable to mobilize on a large enough scale to deal with the threat, so there was chaos for quite a while. To prevent such an event from happening again, he created this, which he claimed was capable of detecting memetic influence from both void beasts and more local sources. Additionally, it could interact with cameras that were hooked up to the same system as it, hiding any dangerous information from being spread. However, he did include a warning with the detailed description, and that was that the system had to be replaced once every year, with its past data wiped and reinstalled. In truth, the system could maintain normal functions for at least a century before any corruption set in. However, if the load on the system was especially heavy, whether due to an excessively large system or the appearance of numerous entities that had to be censored, this lifespan could shorten drastically. To ensure safety, the one-year time frame was created. After all, there was no way to properly monitor the corruption rate of the system without risking the person doing the inspection themselves becoming infected. I had to admit that I was quite tempted when I saw this item. I knew that Bella Rose was a keeper that had retired at the highest point of the fourth rank. Because of this, he had access to a lot of methods related to the void. Something like a filter to censor out infected information was a welcome addition. Afterwards, I asked if there were any notable downsides of the system, to which he admitted that there were two. Because all infected information is equally censored, it simultaneously prevents the spread of beneficial memes, and at the same time allows people to communicate by infecting the information with harmless memetic influence. The former case could prevent the ruling power from spreading a calming effect to the populace, or even an anti-meme to counter a widespread infection. In order to do so, the entire system had to be temporarily taken offline. As for the latter case, the most that could be known was that a group of people were communicating via infected information, but the contents of their conversations would be completely unknown. As for the price of this system, he offered it to me for a full 100,000 points. This was a large sum of points. Admittedly, I had the points, but I would need to discuss with the others on whether I wanted to get the system from him, or if Chelsea and the others thought that they would be able to create it on their own. I told Bella Rose that I would let him know my decision with plenty of time to spare before the deadline, preparing to shift my attention to other matters. There had still been no new purchases for Ashley's latest game, unfortunately, so it seemed like this project had operated at a net loss. Thankfully, she was undeterred, and had already set up an office from which she could work together with Galahan in real time. I wasn't sure at first how she could manage to do this, but the results actually surprised me. Because Ascension had a rather small player base, she recruited the artificial intelligence behind the game, known as Mary. Mary, being a unique type of entity that could connect to both the admin room and the mortal world without any delay, was capable of real-time communication. From this office, she could send any requirements from Galahan to the workers in the admin room, and vice versa. Moreover, because she was the primary spirit of Ascension, she was uniquely suited to help them create the NPCs in that game. Udana had been keeping a careful watch on the reports coming in through her office, wary for anything that might have led to the scenario that Fisher had previously foreseen. From what she could tell, there didn't seem to be any continuing problems, no sudden interest in memetic research. She had even checked to make sure that it had nothing to do with the food that Asnod brought back from Hajit City, confirming multiple times that the food had absolutely no relation to memetic properties. Everything that she found pointed towards the cause having been the universal language that she had squashed when Fisher gave his initial report. Of course, she couldn't be certain that was the case, After all, Fisher did not show a guaranteed future, but rather only a possible one. It was possible for the universal language to be created without any risk of mutation. But the future that he saw changed that. Either way, his predictions had saved the world more than once, so she was inclined to prepare for the worst, especially when the worst could very well lead to the extinction of all life on the planet. As she let out a sigh of relief, Asnod opened the door, making his way into the office. "Is everything all right?" he asked, curiously, to which Udana nodded her head.
"I'm fine. Just dealing with the usual stuff." "Were you able to get anything interesting on your end?" she asked, knowing that Asnod had briefly tried the new Ascension game. He always tried the new games at least once, just to see if there were any unique cooking insights that could be gained from them. Asnod simply shook his head, moving to sit next to Udana.
"Unfortunately not. The world economy within the game is still too new. They've only just developed their first few cities, so there isn't really a food culture or anything there yet. Perhaps in a few more years, or even a decade or two. However, I'm not hopeful when it comes to that."
Udana nodded at that, leaning over against his shoulder.
"At least there's still plenty for you to discover in Fragments of Ascidia?"
Asnod couldn't help but chuckle when he heard that. As that game was an entire galaxy of life, there were many sights there that the two of them had yet to see, even before the game's forced restart.
"I suppose there is. In that case, you'll need to join me when you get the chance."
Udana smiled, looking forward to that. Just as she was about to speak up, an alert on her terminal startled her, making her glance over. Part of her was dreading that this could be the alarm for the memetic attack that Fisher had mentioned. Instead, what she saw on the screen was a report from Ashtanu's local observatory. Because of the new barrier around the systems, their ability to function had been greatly reduced. However, they still had their ability to monitor the system that they were in, and so they busied themselves with doing just that. Udana arched a brow at the report, opening the message.
"Let's see. In the early morning, just before 9 o'clock, a significant spike was detected within the planet's dimensium energy signatures. Similar spikes were reported from other observatories across their hyperlane network. Cause unknown, effects unknown." Udana pursed her lips when she read this. Dimensium was a material unique to Deccan, as well as the golem world that was created as a twin of Deccan. For the most part, this material didn't give off any powerful fluctuations, the energy it released serving as little more than background radiation that enabled the use of card magic.
"Have you noticed any problems with your cards today?" Udana asked Asnod, who read over the message himself. Asnod shook his head, but then paused.
"To be fair, I haven't had the chance to really use any today. However, if there was a problem with the cards, you would have been notified of it long ago. If anything, I would suggest checking with the Mitong in the March. Perhaps they would have more information about what such a pulse meant."
Udana let out a small sigh, agreeing that such was the right thing to do. Waving a hand, she sent out a communication request with the High Mother, who answered surprisingly quickly. On the other end of the video call, the liquid metal golem that served as the highest ruling power of the Mitong smiled at Udana.
"Is there something that I can do for you, Lady Udana?" she asked politely.
Udana didn't feel like beating around the bush, so she got straight to the point. "Earlier today, our scans detected a wide-scale pulse in the background dimensium energy all across the Hyperlane network. You and the March have done more studies on dimensium than we have, so I wanted to ask you if you had any ideas as to what would be the cause."
Udana was still rather relaxed, but she noticed the High Mother's face falling for a moment before returning to her normal smile.
"That's unusual. Normally, dimensium energy doesn't fluctuate on such a large scale. However, we experienced something similar, both the March and our own race. Unlike your response, though, the dimensium energy within our world was greatly depleted for roughly 10 seconds earlier in the day. This was rather troubling,
so I quickly consulted with the March King to confirm that the situation was present on his side as well. Udana's eyes widened slightly, sitting up straighter in her seat to pay more attention to the call. If this was true, she had no idea what it meant. She just couldn't imagine it leading to anything good. Chapter 102. Udana paced back and forth in her office, looking at the various reports that she had on her desk. Over the last 3 days, there had been increasing spikes in Dimensium activity within Deccan. Simultaneously, the Dimensium within the realm, belonging to the March and the Mitong, were disappearing at the same intervals. The first time that it happened, the change lasted for only 2 seconds. After that, it lasted for 10 seconds, then a minute. By the 5th time that the spike occurred, Dimensium activity was altered in both realms for a full 10 minutes. Projected on the wall of her office were the images of both the High Mother and the March King. Although the March King was naturally expressionless, his face too rigid to convey emotions, the High Mother looked incredibly worried.
"Is there anything that you know about this, as a member of the Greater Pantheon?" she asked, though Udana could only shake her head.
"Nothing. We've never had anything like this before. Can you think of anything that has happened in either of your worlds that could have led to this, most likely within the week prior to the first activity?" When they were asked this, the two looked at each other's projection, seeing clear uncertainty in their eyes.
"There has been no new research projects regarding Dimensium within the March systems," the king said, in an electronic tone. "While the Mitong are always studying Dimensium, nothing that we've done lately should have any kind of universal impact, at least none of the logged projects. There's always the chance that somebody in one of our races is doing a research project without informing the higher-ups."
Udana gave a short nod. It was impossible for anyone to try to monitor every secret project. She closed her eyes, sending out a distress message.
"Terra, can you tell me anything about this?"
Normally, Udana didn't like to rely on Terra for things like this, as she preferred to take care of her own problems. More importantly, it felt like she was taking advantage of her sister's position as part of the system. After a few moments, Terra responded somberly.
"I can tell you that this isn't a response to any mortal projects."
"Are you able to tell me what is causing it, or any kind of solution? If this continues, won't that realm completely lose its Dimensium?" Terra fell silent again, before speaking in a soft, almost comforting tone.
"It's not just the Dimensium, Udana."
Udana's eyes widened, her ears standing on end.
"Don't tell me."
"That's right,"
Terra confirmed Udana's inner thoughts.
"That realm is collapsing. The Dimensium is merely the first symptom."
Udana's pace back and forth in her office immediately quickened, the two royals watching her as she held a silent conversation with Terra.
"But why? Why now, of all times? And what could have caused it?"
"Have you forgotten how that realm was made?"
Terra asked, and Udana had to think back to recall. The world of the golems was not actually made through the system. In an attempt to cut costs, Rian had created a cut in the fabric of space, cloning Deccan and attaching the second world to it. That was how the gear had originally made it to Deccan, by finding regions of destabilized space that they could slip through.
"But why is it only happening now? That world has been around for so long at this point."
This time, Terra couldn't quickly answer.
"All I can say is that it is likely because of V-Day. The disturbance caused by those void monsters was immense, and could have disrupted the balance between the two worlds. In fact, it's possible that these instabilities have been occurring for quite some time, but they only just got to the point where they became noticeable."
Udana bit her lip, trying to think.
Can you tell me which world is going to fall? Is it theirs, or Deccan?"
Terra let out a long sigh.
"Deccan was created by the system, and has the highest stability.
The world created by Rion is merely a soap bubble clinging to the side of it, getting ready to finally pop. This was not the answer that Udana wanted to hear, though it was what she expected. If it was Deccan that was doomed to failure, they would only need to evacuate a few worlds, and there was plenty of space among the other realms. However, even after the events of V-Day, the sheer number of worlds governed by both the March and the Mitong was staggering. Maybe only one in every 100 planets could have their population saved, especially now that they couldn't reliably explore outside of the Hyperlane network. With a solemn look on her face, Udana turned to face the two royals. There was no good way to put this. I just consulted with my sister, and she has identified the cause of the disturbance. Initially, the High Mother looked as if she wanted to be hopeful, but seeing Udana's serious expression, her face fell further. There's no fixing it, is there? Udana shook her head. According to what she has discovered, your realm is going to collapse. The Dimensium is only the first sign. I don't know how much time your world has left, but it will probably not be long. A year? A month? Maybe even only a week. Numbers could be seen flashing through the eyes of the March King before he spoke. If a mandatory evacuation takes place, given the current resources, it is estimated that we can preserve 0.0001% of our empire's collective populations every day, taking into account the traffic of inter-universal gateways. The High Mother bit her lip, her silver body tensing. There's got to be something. What if we deployed fallen gods to help stabilize the world barrier? Udana shook her head. You can delay the problem like that, but I don't know if there is a way to fix the damage that's been done. At best, I can suggest getting in contact with the Another World Research Group. They are working on a world creation project, after all. If they are able to get even a temporary realm created for you, there is a chance to save more people. But even then, we can't save everyone, the High Mother said, in a tone of solemn understanding. Additionally, if this is due to the collapse of the world barrier, then any large-scale traffic could accelerate the degradation. She lowered her head in thought before looking at the March King. My good sir, I have a proposal. For now, we must completely cease all travel in and out of our universe. Additionally, we need to close all existing portals, including those for communication networks. This will buy the most time from our end. After that, we can have fallen gods sent from other worlds to try and slow the progress of the world's destruction. While this happens, our two empires must try to create a new project for rapid research and development. We need to create a device capable of storing an entire planet and its inhabitants safely in a place no more than 3 centimeters cubed. If we do that, and can mass-produce this device, we can go to each world to package it and then move to a new realm created by this research foundation. There is one more problem, Udana interjected while the March King was deliberating the idea. The digital conversion system may accelerate the problem. Any production methods you use for this plan have to be carried out conventionally. The High Mother's silver face showed reluctance, but she firmly nodded her head. If that's the case, it's unlikely we'll be able to make enough in time. But we have to try. We need to put the combined power of both of our empires behind this one project. I'm sorry, Udana, but I do not believe that we will be in any position to help with breaching the Hyperlane network until this problem is dealt with. Udana nodded her head, fully understanding that. Although the March and Mitong were the best researchers she knew, due to each of their kind being an advanced supercomputer, there was no way that their help could be expected when they couldn't even help themselves. I wish you both the best of luck. If you need any help, remember to pray. A prayer to the Greater Pantheon should have no influence on the world barrier in the slightest. The High Mother looked relieved when she heard that, glad that there was at least some method of communicating with the outside world that could be preserved. Very well,
The March King nodded his acceptance of the plan. I will begin enacting the initial stages immediately. Udana, I shall leave it to you and the others to ensure that no traveler attempts to cross into our land. Udana smiled reassuringly. I'll make sure that they know your realm is under lockdown. After she said that, she cut the call with the two, immediately changing to call Chelsea.
Yo, Udana, what's with the serious face? Chelsea asked when the call connected, a smudge of grease on her cheek.
How quickly can you get a stable world generated? It can have a simple copy of another world's laws, and it doesn't need to be permanent. Hearing Udana's tone, Chelsea's face became serious. If I get a full scan of the four cores of the world that I'm copying, I can have a module ready in 3 weeks? It will take a little time for simulations and testing. Why? The world of Tubrok's golems is collapsing. Chelsea's eyes widened when she heard that, before narrowing in focus.
Give me 2 weeks, and I can have a temporary shelter. I'll say this now, if the world is collapsing because of a law instability, I can't use their current realm as the basis, nor Deccan. I'll need to use the cores from the AWRG universe. This means that they won't have access to naturally occurring Dimensium anymore.
That's fine, Udana agreed without hesitation. It's a far cry better than doing nothing. Do you have any idea how long the shelter will last?
Not without testing. However, we don't have the technology to do a universal time acceleration yet. I can make the space, but they'll need to bring the landmass.
When Chelsea said that, Udana gave a firm nod. They're researching that right now. They won't leave behind all of the different races that they are governing.
I'm sure, Chelsea smiled. Though, why are you bringing this to me? If you need a new world, couldn't Dale make a complete copy of Deccan for them?
Udana paused. She had been so focused on solving things from a mortal standpoint that she had forgotten about such a simple solution.
Let's try our way first. If you can't get the temporary shelter established in time, we will use the system to create a complete world. Either way, it won't be possible to move everyone from their empires until they finish their current research. So, we have time.
Chelsea nodded her head, chuckling faintly.
I suppose. For now, I'll use the scans of our cores to begin constructing a clone universe. Once I have all of the materials I need, and we can construct a void defense around the new world, I'll let you know.
Chapter 103. While Udana was struggling with ideas on how to forestall the collapse of the Golem realm, Dana was hard at work with her workshop. With everything else out of the way, she wanted to work on her personal projects some more. Due to the problems of energy consumption and large-scale regulations, she had to give up on the idea of a single tool that could act as a mass-produced protection device for the people of the various worlds. It was regrettable. But there were simply too many problems with such a plan once she actually got into the creation process. Similarly, creating a spell that could identify and punish wrongdoers would be no different from having an incredibly powerful computer do the same. While it would be possible, the popular was unlikely to accept it. This began to narrow Dana's list of projects as she realized the various faults that they had, trying to find one that was equally possible and still impressive enough to be something she could be proud of. This led to her sitting at her workbench, drawing out a plan for a bracer with a small port attached to the front. In order to solve the problems that people were presently facing, Dana didn't need to invent a new technology, only create a way to repurpose what already existed in a more usable form. For this technology, what Dana was modifying was the cloning technology that Tubrok had created for Olympus, specifically what was used in Tsubaki's training room to allow her to place herself in a mortal body to handle her trials. When it came to law enforcement, their most common and simultaneously most difficult challenge was dealing with energy bodies. Most criminals that possess significant enough strength to stand against the police or the army would have long shed their mortal forms. This alone makes them far more difficult to confine, as they can simply reshape their body according to their thoughts. Up to this point, the most common way of handling such threats was to hit them with a powerful sleep spell or similar effect, and then make sure that they did not wake up until they were in a solid room with no openings to escape from. This room was then covered in a system null zone and anti-magic, with the entire facility under specific void shielding to prevent any form of spatial travel. Such cells were costly, to say the least. Between the raw materials for the prison cell and the energy needed to maintain the various wards, it was hard for the police to be able to keep criminals properly contained. And that was when they didn't have some unique energy that allowed them to simply invalidate those wards. Thus, Dana sought a way to resolve this problem. Sienna, I'm going to need to test subjects. Train up 6 shadow people at various levels ranging from 200 to 1,000 with a time limit of 1 month. All of them should be pure energy bodies by the end of the deadline. At least 2 of them should have gone through the 3 steps of perfection.
Understood. Sienna responded immediately, and Dana could feel the fluctuation in her shadow that indicated that this order was being carried out. Dana's plan was simple. A person's entire being was divided into 3 parts, that being their mana, ki, and spirit. Ki was a reflection of DNA, and could be used to accurately identify an individual. Through the right refinement, it was even possible to reproduce true blood by converting their ki. Meanwhile, mana and spirit were the core of the mind and soul. In Dana's opinion, the hard part was not creating a mortal body through the target's ki, but rather forcing the core of their being into that body. This was especially the case for divine beings, or those that had achieved all 3 steps of perfection. However, Dana was confident that she could make it work, because she had time on her side. The port at the end of the bracer was a card launcher. When activated, it would launch a specially designed containment card at the target, trapping them inside. This was only a temporary measure, as most people strong enough to warrant this method would have a way around it. If the occupied card was then placed back in the bracelet, it would put the contents inside into a vastly decelerated flow of time, while also collecting the ambient energy from them to produce the necessary clone body. Back at the police station, the body would be printed at level 1, and the consciousness within the card would be uploaded. If everything went according to Dana's plan, this could take a new form of capital punishment. Rather than killing the individual, it would be their achievements that would be killed. A god would become mortal again, having to start over from nothing. Of course, this wasn't perfect. Dana knew that a god would not lose their full divine status from something like this. They would most likely become a demigod in their new body, due to the powerful energy permeating their body at the moment of transfer. Similarly, those that had achieved perfection would have an edge over their peers in terms of energy stability. None of this would matter much, though, as they would still be reduced to level 1. At this level, even a normal child would be stronger than them, so the police would have no trouble keeping them in check. They wouldn't even have the energy to cast an advanced spell, no matter how powerful a mage they had been before. The clone printer was something that Tubrock had made long ago, so it only needed a few modifications. Similarly, a capture card was not difficult for Dana to produce. The struggle came in the stasis field, and combining everything together into a form that could be made standard issue for law enforcement.
"She seems to have found something fun to work on," Tsubaki said with a smile, as we passed by Dana's workshop, hearing the sounds of heavy machinery echoing from inside. We had planned to come and see if she wanted to watch a movie together, but changed our minds when we saw how busy she appeared to be. "As long as she is enjoying herself, that's fine," I nodded my head, hands in my pockets as I walked. Udana had already sent in her report about what was going on with Deccan, so there was nothing more that I could do about that for now. Even if I wanted to get directly involved as the Keeper, the most that I would be able to do is create the universe for the populace to be moved to. I wasn't able to mass-produce devices that didn't exist yet, or move the population of 2 galactic empires to a different universe. As for asking Auravi to handle it as the goddess of travel,
I have no doubt that she could if she pushed herself. But doing so would leave her out of commission for years to come while she recovered her power. If another incident happened that mortals had no way of solving and we needed her power, there would be nothing that we could do. I had faith that the Mitong and the March could create the device they needed in time. Mass-producing it in high enough quantities would be difficult, but they literally lived on planet-sized forges. There had to be ways for them to get it done.
What do you want to do now?
Tsubaki's voice snapped me out of my thoughts, and I smiled back at her. Something productive is what I'd like to say. However, there's not much that I can contribute to the major leading powers at this point. I'm not a super scientist like James, or a brilliant political leader. There's nothing that needs me to punch it really hard, so I'm not entirely sure what I can do for now. Tsubaki blinked, before nodding her head in understanding.
That's reasonable. After all, there is little that one more set of helping hands could accomplish in these circumstances. However, to say that there is nothing that you can do is not exactly accurate.
When I heard that, I tilted my head curiously at her, wondering what she meant. Thankfully, she continued.
There is one thing that you can do, and only you can do right now, my keeper. If you are set on acting in a productive manner and willing to expend some of your resources to do so, I am not talking about points, but rather something else.
I'm listening. I turned to fully face her, and Tsubaki smiled.
Currently, one of the leading problems facing the world is the inability to escape the hyperlane networks without facing the armies of memetic monsters awaiting outside. By my understanding, you have a way to fix this, or at the very least, a way to discover a way to fix it.
I blinked in surprise, taking a moment to realize what she meant.
The Sorcerer title?
This was a title that I gained long ago from the system, but I rarely used. The reason for this being that it could only be used once a month, and I was always worried that something else would come up that I would need it for. Gradually, this had led me to forgetting about it entirely. Tsubaki nodded her head, and I began to give it some thought. It was only a matter of time before the mortals of my realm discovered the way to move beyond the hyperlane network. The problem was that they didn't have all that much time right now. Being restricted by the network would no doubt slow down the process of the Mitong and March trying to save their worlds. Thus, with a nod, I agreed and began to focus. I needed to word this very specifically in order to get the result I desired. At the same time, I began mentally recording everything, ready to project it with my illusion domain to share the information with Tsubaki. I need a magical construct that will allow a large transportation vessel to safely pass through the hyperlane network's barrier and avoid the attack of memetic monsters outside. As soon as I finished my request, I felt information flooding into my brain. A dense diagram appeared, and I struggled to replicate it with my domain. This wasn't a third-tier spell diagram, or even a fourth, but one of the fifth tier. I saw a dark, silvery ball of metal with over 50 tiny spell formations embedded within. As I produced the image for Tsubaki, she was quick to note down the smallest detail. Once I saw the finished product, a rough description entered my mind. It's a complete information barrier. This design will prevent any form of memetic infection by completely blocking out all information from the outside world. The additional nodes on the device are to digitally reproduce artistic renderings of the surroundings that have been censored of any form of contaminated information. The shield is meant to be constantly active, but the energy consumption? I don't know if this will be viable.
Tsubaki simply smiled when I said that. Let them worry about the energy source. For now, they have an answer that is produced by the system itself. This can serve as a direction to guide them, at the very least. Now, if you don't mind, can you save this illusion in some way? I would like to provide it to the research teams as a prototype blueprint, and I am not confident that I successfully reproduced the finest details of the fifth-tier spell construction.
I nodded my head, focusing on creating a mana bead
and storing the information of the spell inside. Pass your light through this, and it should be able to create a three-dimensional view of the illusion, I said, with a small smile, and she accepted the bead happily. Chapter 104. Tsubaki understood how the system worked better than most, and knew to take its advice in moderation. As soon as she prompted the keeper to activate his new title, she knew that the result would not be immediately usable. What the system provided was not the optimal solution to the problem presented, but merely an effective one. Tsubaki knew for a fact that an information block like this would be able to eliminate the type of problems that ships had been facing, but it needed to be heavily modified to work with the current limitations of technology. Once she had the mana bead in her hand containing the illusion of the finished product, she bowed and left the keeper's side. After returning to her room, she ascended via the heavenly gate and closed her eyes to pray. High Mother of the Mitong, I have an urgent matter to discuss with you. The communication channel that I am using right now will not affect your situation.
Tsubaki, is it?
The High Mother responded a moment later, though her tone seemed rushed.
If you could you keep this brief? I need to focus on managing resources for research here.
This is part of the matter I wish to discuss. The Keeper has created a schematic for an item capable of reliably traveling beyond the borders of the Hyperlane network. However, this item may be too high quality for our current vessels and requires a great deal of power. I believe that the Mitong should be able to quickly refine it into something more usable. If so, you would have a higher chance of saving your people. There was a long pause after Tsubaki said this, before the High Mother's voice became more urgent.
Can this information be transmitted via the channel, or is it compact enough to prevent any additional damage?
The information currently exists within a bead of mana, roughly 2 centimeters in diameter. By passing divinity through it, it will project the finished product, along with my personal notes about its construction. Hearing Tsubaki's words, the High Mother appeared relieved.
If that's the case, I would appreciate the information being sent over as carefully as possible. In turn, I'll let you know if we are able to meet your expectations.
Tsubaki nodded her head at that. I will also be releasing this information to the research groups of Deccan. If they create a working model, I will send the related materials to you. After she said that, Tsubaki returned to the mortal world and went to create a digital conversion file of the bead. One of the beads was sent to the High Mother through a small rift in the void, while another was sent to the researchers of Deccan. Within Deccan, a small bead suddenly appeared in midair, falling onto the table of a renowned research team that was working on the current problems of memetic shielding for spatial travel. They looked at the bead in confusion, some backing away from the table as if expecting the bead to explode. A moment later, a paper appeared with the bead, slowly falling down to land next to it. One of the researchers stepped forward to read it, furrowing his brow. This appears to be an emergency delivery from Olympus, a highly advanced prototype for the memetic shield.
Tubrok has created something to solve our dilemma?
One of the other researchers, a female kitsune, spoke up.
Or is it perhaps Ashley?
No. This appears to come directly from the Keeper himself, by way of Tsubaki. When they heard that, silence fell over the room. According to the description in the note, it is a full information barrier designed to interact with a ship's systems. What does it mean by information barrier? Another researcher spoke up. This one was a human male, brows furrowed.
Shutting down scanners certainly won't be enough.
The man continued to read through the note, slowly shaking his head. No, this barrier, according to the notes, blocks all forms of information from entering the barrier through more than a dozen layers, each of which filters the information and alters it slightly to remove any trace of memetic influence. Thus, what appears on the ship's scans would look similar to what is truly outside, but will not carry any memetic traces.
Will that work for memetic creatures that use physical methods of entry? The female kitsune asked.
This time it was the human male that spoke up.
If it is purely physical power, the shields on the ship should be able to manage. The problems with physical entry methods before was that they had a trace of memetic influence, even if it was only targeting the ship itself. Theoretically, a complete block of information would be able to prevent such creatures from entering.
That's correct, the man with the note said, setting it down and picking up the bead. However, this is only a prototype and needs to be refined to integrate into our systems, as well as have its power consumption reduced. Does anyone here have divinity?
I do,
a halfling boy shouted, running over. I'm training to become the god of discovery and ascension, and should be able to use normal artifacts. What do you need me to do?
The man smiled, holding the bead out for the boy.
Pass some of your divinity through this, and it should project the image, as well as construction notes. The boy nodded his head, following the instructions. Soon the image of a dark, silvery sphere emerged above his head, covered in tiny blue specks. Along the side, as if added later, a number of notes appeared.
This is an alloy created by mixing mithril, iron from between the 52nd and 61st floor of Fior, and silver from the 19th floor of Fior, the female Kitsune muttered, reading out the description. Although the keeper had not said this aloud, the information had been transmitted through to his illusion to be understood by those actively watching.
The materials are easy to acquire. I'm more worried about the magic, the lead researcher spoke up, squinting his eyes to look more closely at the blue specks. We need an incredibly detailed spell printer, capable of being accurate on a microscopic scale.
By my estimate, it would take us 18 hours to print all of these nodes after we have the information in the database. Once we have the prototype built, we can work on refining it.
Everyone, get to work!
He clapped his hands, snapping everyone to attention. As they all left, he put his hand on the halfling boy's shoulder.
You should get back to Ascension, although I would personally suggest having your first divinity forged. If you are already on the path, you need to see it through to the end.
The boy's eyes widened, and he nodded his head.
Yes, sir, but how are you going to use the bead without me here? He asked in confusion, earning a small chuckle.
You're still new here. Don't worry, we all memorized what we needed just now. If it's within a week, that image won't degrade in our minds. Try to advance your divinity by that point, or we'll need to have you show it to us again.
The halfling boy nodded his head, handing the bead back and turning to leave the research lab quickly. As he did, the lead researcher held his chin.
It's not just layers of barriers, they're disposable layers. Only the innermost three matter. At the slightest sign of memetic traces penetrating the first of the three, it and all external barriers are immediately purged without accepting any further information. Then the second of the three reprojects all of the higher layers before purging itself and letting the innermost layer reconstruct it.
This system was designed to allow absolutely no form of memetic trace to enter the vessel. But this method of reconstructing and deconstructing the barriers uses too much energy. If instead we have three devices that we rotate out when one gets compromised to the third layer, the compromised device can be disassembled and replaced with freshly printed barriers. Doing it this way would remove the need for the most costly two inner barriers and a substantial drain from the third. Although he couldn't say that he could accurately create a fifth-tier spell on his own, it was a different matter to understand one that was already laid out before him. When it came to that, he was confident that he was among the best.
We might be able to replace the core material, too. There were two nodes that imbued that material with a trace of the void, making it capable of interfacing with and detecting memetic influence. However, that won't save us as much as simplifying the barriers and handling the system connections in a more direct method. He nodded his head as he walked to his desk, beginning to type out his plan. From what he saw in the device, there were a lot of areas that could be refined to reduce the burden on a ship's energy source. However, now that they had a sample and a direction to work with, he was confident that they would be able to create a viable product before long.
Someone put in a request for the King Consort.
Asnod sat in his kitchen, streams of light stretching out between his fingers. He was currently working on replicating popular flavors of food from Deccan culture via the energy kernels that he had discovered from the Hadjit city. As he was focusing, his terminal suddenly hummed next to him, snapping him out of his thoughts. Looking at the terminal, he recognized the number as one that Udana had frequent contact with. "Yes?" he asked after answering the call, placing his hand over the terminal. "This is Asnod speaking. How may I help you?"
"King Consort, if you have the time, I would like to invite you to our humble facility to seek your aid in an important matter."
The person on the other end sounded feminine and spoke with a respectful tone.
"As the god of optimization, we have a task that you are uniquely suitable for. I promise it won't use up much of your time. We merely wish to consult with you." Asnod arched a brow when he heard that. It was rare for research groups to reach out for him, even with his domains. From what he knew of the current major projects the various foundations were working on, he could make an educated guess that they had another memetic shield and wanted him to optimize it.
"Very well. I'll see what I can do," he assured them. Asnod was by no means a technological expert, nor was he a master of the void and its memetic properties. He had tamed some void beasts due to his mastery of cooking, but that was the extent of his achievements in that field. If they were calling him, he could only assume that they must be desperate for results. Still, his optimization domain would be able to provide at least some feedback that they may have overlooked. So he did not feel that it would be a wasted trip. At worst, he would tell them what they already knew and come back without suffering any loss. "I'm heading out for a little while," he thought, sending the message to Udana. "I'll be sure to come back in time to prepare dinner."
"You'd better. You promised me something special tonight," Udana retorted, causing Asnod to briefly chuckle as he stood, walking towards the kitchen's door.
Chapter 105. The time of the next invasion was coming closer, and so far there was no word from Ashley on her being able to replicate the memetic security device that I saw on Bella Rose's trade list. According to her, she just didn't have enough information about the structure of memes to get something that could so accurately detect and censor memes without itself risking corruption, or without blocking completely unrelated information like a random tissue commercial. Even Chelsea was interested in the system, because it seemed that the designer had more knowledge on memetic powers than she herself did. Because of this, I ultimately made the decision to make the trade. 100,000 points was a lot, but it would ultimately be worth it if we were able to get a way to prevent further contaminated information from spreading in the world. Bella Rose's visit to the admin room was rather short, only showing up long enough to do the trade, with both of us notifying a member of the Gilded Branch as insurance. Naturally, the person I used as a contact was Balu, as she was the one I knew best from the Guild. After he was done with the trade, he thanked me and left, not seeing much sense in staying around any longer. Just from looking at him, you could tell that he was a rather casual old man, having been in this game for far too long at this point. Still, I was able to make the purchase, and we would be able to get the system in just over 2 more weeks when the invasion happened. Within the Temple of Fate of Earth, atop a high tower, Keenan sat with his foot bouncing impatiently against the floor. His eyes were locked on the sky above, as if peering out beyond the clouds. Behind him, a figure with a wooden staff walked over, smiling slightly. "Still wanting to rush out there?" Jace asked in a knowing tone. Keenan let out a long sigh, nodding his head. "That's right. I've already conferred with the goddess Leoan and confirmed that the abilities I set in my domain should render me immune to most memetic influences." "Most, but not all," Jace pointed out, lightly spinning the staff in his hand. Even now he kept his eyes closed, only opening them when a dire situation struck. On average, it was decades between each instance of his eyes opening, so his luck was always increasing. Furthermore, his high luck had made it easier for him to acquire levels in luck-related classes, like Gambler, or earn similar titles. Even without Terra's old blessing, he could be considered one of the luckiest people alive.
"Is that what your instinct is telling you?" Keenan asked, showing genuine concern for his oldest friend's opinion.
He learned long ago to trust Jace's gut, because going against it would inevitably invite disaster.
"No, just common sense," Jace chuckled. "I don't like to gamble with the life of a friend. Besides, if you did clear out every monster attacking the barrier around this system, more would come, and there are still infinitely more around every other protected planet. Your actions would do little besides soothing your anxiety."
"Maybe that wouldn't be so bad," Keenan muttered under his breath.
"What does your instinct tell you about the situation?"
The feline god of sight tilted his head with a smile, twirling his staff.
"Wait," he said, twirling it again. "Three. And again. Months."
Every time he stopped twirling his staff, his finger landed on one of the many engraved words written along the staff.
3 months.
"So something will happen then?" Keenan asked, eyes wide as he was given a time frame to look forward to.
"I don't know." Jace shrugged his shoulders. "It could be good. It could be bad. It could be nothing. Using luck to predict the future has never been certain."
"Says the fate seer," Keenan muttered under his breath, Jace laughing at the mention of his gambler legend. "I always wondered why it gave me that title when the whole point is not to see anything. Regardless, if you're going to fight, wait." Saying that, he sighed, spinning the staff idly in his hand. "There are a great many minds smarter than the two of us combined working on this project. We will do what we can do, and leave the rest to those with the power to create change." Keenan nodded, sighing to himself and standing up. As he did, Jace grabbed his staff again to prepare to walk with Keenan, only to stiffen, his ears and tail standing straight.
"What?"
Jace's head turned towards his staff, where his finger had landed on the word danger.
"We need to move," he said urgently, tossing the staff and quickly catching it. "Above. Danger coming from above."
"But it told you to wait 3 months to fight." Keenan furrowed his brow before his eyes went wide.
"Is it possible that it is a danger unrelated to the mimetic monsters?" he asked, to which Jace nodded his head.
"That must be it." Jace closed his eyes, hand folded in prayer.
"Lady Terra, I request an audience."
"Yes? What is it, Jace?" Terra had always been rather warm towards Jace. He was by far one of her oldest priests at this point, and had truly been the most devout when carrying out a trial personally assigned by him.
"My fortune is speaking to me of imminent danger from beyond the sky, likely unrelated to the beasts plaguing the barrier. This narrows the possible causes down considerably, leading me to believe that there is an asteroid inbound. With all of our long-range monitoring disabled to avoid mimetic contamination, we would have no way of discerning that such an event was occurring."
"Jace?" Terra seemed somewhat exasperated.
"You're a god. A meteor would not count as any form of danger for you. Even if the planet was destroyed, you would survive, relatively unharmed."
Jace almost opened his eyes when he heard that, realizing that she was right.
"If that's the case, what danger did my fortune foresee?"
"This might have been a false alarm, but let me look at your fate," Terra said, before falling silent.
Jace felt as if he was being put under a microscope, knowing that this should be the sensation of having his fate observed by Terra.
"Jace, open your eyes, now!"
Hearing Terra's almost panicked shout, Jace immediately opened his eyes. As he did so, the world around him seemed to go black, the sky darkening. This was the divine power that he cultivated, which consisted of a simple rule. He could see with his eyes closed, but opening his eyes would deprive the sight of all around him.
"Jace?" Keenan sounded alarmed when he saw Jace's eyes open suddenly, his own vision going black.
"Give me a moment, Keenan." Jace spoke nervously, focusing.
"Lady Terra?"
"A void monster snuck through the barrier around Earth. Its law allows it to invert the fortune of others. However, with all of the defenses in place,
It can only invert the fortune of the one with the highest luck stat. Jace nodded his head, closing his eyes once again. And I was the one chosen, not Empress Elisei? Although Jace was incredibly fortunate, he could not compare to the true child of fortune, Empress Elisei. For the most part, her fortune was derived from her karma, but it in turn influenced her luck stat. Ironically, it's likely her good karma that made her decide to take a diplomatic journey to Fior, Terra said, with a self-deprecating tone. It will take about 10 minutes before that monster is able to find the next target. Jace gave another nod, turning his head towards Keenan. You wanted a fight, right? He asked with a small smirk. What if I told you that a void monster snuck into the realm barrier and just tried to assassinate me? That wasn't the whole truth, but it was essentially what the outcome would have been without Terra's warning. Keenan's eyes went wide, a murderous look on his face. A black spear appeared in his right hand, and he tore open a rift in space. Since he was found in the woods as a child, Jace had been his emotional support, his anchor. Even though he had gotten his chaos domain under control and wasn't a threat to those around him, he knew that it was only Jace that had been with him from the beginning.